Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Rohan Nagini, joined today by my good friend, the Michigan booster who got Jim Harbaugh to stay in Ann Arbor, Sports Illustrated senior writer and New York Times best-selling author of the book Blood in the Garden, Chris Herring. Chris, how's it going, buddy?
Dude, you like the bona fides that you give me each time we do this podcast are like they just literally you top them each time somehow. Dude, I don't know how.
I literally, if you want to know how sick in the head I am, I literally had a dream last night about the podcast introduction, but It was because you needed a specific plug for the book, but you felt really ashamed to ask. Just so everyone knows, Chris never, ever, ever asks me to plug his book. I just, you know, we do it out of our love for Chris. So I had a weird dream where you were like, felt really bad because you had to ask me to plug your book for you.
That I got real desperate out of nowhere. And just man, that is a super specific dream to have for something I've legit never asked you guys to do. But I
think it's because I went to sleep thinking about what are we going to talk about on the podcast tomorrow. You know what I mean?
Well, it'll have a connection to the book, I guess, in some ways. But the book, by the time a lot of people are listening to this, I think it'll be exactly 1 year since the book dropped, which is cool.
How about that?
Time flies, man. But again, you know, I've said it on this pod and just in general, really, really appreciative of everybody that's supported. And it's been more successful than I ever could have imagined as far as the number of people that bought it, the way people have responded to it, the stuff that's kind of like happening as an offshoot to it is, you know, we've talked about the stuff with Spike and the docuseries.
Yeah, how come you haven't put me, you, and Spike on a group chat yet?
Probably because I think Spike gets overwhelmed with people, generally speaking. I think I was telling you about that. He had me sit with him courtside, actually this time last year at a Knicks game on MLK Day. And just a number of selfies and autographs and everything that he's asked for. Like it's actually not that I needed to be able to like have uninterrupted conversation with him about anything that deep, but he like literally can't just sit and focus on a game or watch, you know, like enjoy a conversation with someone because everybody wants a piece of him, which is probably how being a celebrity works. And it's probably the cost of that. But because of that, there's times where even I'll like reach out and we'll have like a really, really clear conversation going via text or email or whatever. And then it's just like no response. And it's like, I can't even be mad. He's Spike Lee. So I'm a tread lightly before I start kind of introducing the people from my life into his life. Cause I feel like he's barely got enough, focus, you know, just for me and the stuff that we've got going on. But
if he didn't want to be bothered so much, he shouldn't have made those movies that were so good.
I'll tell him to do the right thing and open up his world a little bit. Yeah, that was a really bad
pivot.
Anyway, moving right along. That was pretty bad.
Some of the heat I've caught for segues and intros in the past, that was right up there in terms of the worst of them. Chris, we got a lot of things we would like to get to today. We're past the halfway point of the NBA season. There's a couple things I want to get to. I guess I'll ask you real quick. Was there anything you wanted to talk about from the MLK Day games? We had some good finishes. I mean, nothing too crazy. I just wanted to throw that out in case there was anything fun that caught your eye.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that there's a couple. And I'll kind of include like MLK weekend, just because there are some teams that played Saturday mm-hmm. Sunday as opposed to Monday. I think one was cool, like Walker Kessler's series.
I was about to ask you if the Wolves called the Jazz and said, we'll trade you Rudy Gobert for Walker Kessler straight up. The Jazz would say no, right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Especially, I mean, think about if you remember when the whole stalemate between the Knicks and the Jazz was going on for Donovan Mitchell. Remember that the Jazz, like, essentially kind of didn't really, really, really want RJ Barrett. I mean, obviously the Knicks reportedly offered him. And the reason that they would have said no to that, because I assume most teams, you know, that are rebuilding would, of course you'd want to have like an RJ Barrett. You know, like, even if you don't think he's great, he's good. He's got the potential to be an all-star over his career. The only reason you're saying no to something like that is that you don't want to take on his salary. So multiply that how much more Rudy Gobert is making than RJ Barrett. Aside from the fact that if you're the Jazz, you've already, you've already seen that you,
road,
not to mention that Walker Kessler's production offensively is probably going to dwarf whatever Rudy does very, very, very soon. Dwarfed it in this game they just played, but you know, Rudy wasn't healthy and didn't finish the game. But Walker, and I mean, it's not just now, like Walker Kessler is, you know, has been a premier shot blocker. He's been one of the best rebounders in the league. He's got an offensive game. He's got good footwork. He's mobile. This was, you know, and I've been critical of this before from where I sit, where teams, it's one thing when you trade picks. It's another when you essentially trade a guy that you've drafted too, because this trade happened after the draft. It was, what was it, a week or two after the draft, whenever it was. So at this point, this is a guy that, you know, the Timberwolves have just scouted and said, like, this is the guy we want. So to trade whatever it was, five picks and pick swaps or, you know, combined, and then also trade the guy that you just picked that you believed in, I'll be damned if I'm going to be criticized not only for bringing someone to town that, like, wasn't worth it, but also, like, that I went out of my way to identify the guy that I think this team needs in Walker Kessler and then trade him away and watch him like basically gritty all over my team. Like, no thanks. It's a hard no. And yesterday had to be really frustrating for Timberwolves fans from that standpoint, not to mention they had 20 points, 21 rebounds, and that, you know, Utah wins the game by 1 point.
Walker Kessler's legit, man. We were joking about him in the group chat, but did they maybe upgrade at center? I don't want to pile on Gobert. I did not mean to turn this into a Gobert pylon. The version of Gobert that the Wolves traded for is not the version of Gobert we've seen the last couple of years. And it's like the Walker Kessler thing just makes it feel even crazier that this all happened.
Yeah. To your question from before about what else stands out, and I think it'll probably segue into part of what you wanted to talk about today. It's just LeBron, I think, epitomized it, but also Jason Tatum had 51. Bron, I mean, he's in his 20th season now, going for 48. Was it 48-9-9 or 48-8-9 or whatever it was? Granted, it's the Rockets. Granted, you know, neither the Lakers nor the Rockets right now are very good. Şengün had, you know, like a career game. I think he had, what, 33-15? 6-4 or something like that. They need to start running the offense through him is another takeaway that I have. Like, they should have been doing that. But just generally speaking, like, I'm at a point now where my head is spinning from the numbers that people are putting up, whether it's LeBron almost having 50 at age 38, whether it's, you know, Tatum having had more 50-point games than Larry Bird at age 23 or whatever he is, you know, Luka doing what he does. And it's league-wide now where it's interesting. I feel like at one point, as a staff at Sports Illustrated, we used to kind of be of the opinion, the thought, the almost the expectation that, like, okay, for every 50-point game that someone scores, one of us needs to, like, stop what we're doing and write a story about it and an analysis piece, a, you know, a news piece. We can't anymore because it's happening so frequently. So granted, when you get a 71-point game, you're going to write on Mitchell or whatever, but it's just so frequent now that we kind of have to, I think, start thinking about these games differently, analyzing them a little bit differently because the scoring is just so high and so frequent. So yeah, that's the other takeaway I've got from this weekend. It's just like, I can't keep my eyes focused anymore with, you know, it's like ping pong with these scoring games.
Yeah, man. Let's get into that a little bit because I think that's been one of the two kind of bigger picture storylines we've seen from this NBA season. We've had this kind of undercurrent of parity across the league where there are a lot of good teams this year, and that's been interesting. Also, real quick, you mentioned the Rockets. Sorry, I just want to say, so depressing. What a bummer of a team. Get some adults in there. But in addition...
by that, you mean some more vets on the team? Or
yes, yes. They need to do something. It's an egregious tank job. Yeah. And I to the point where it makes me a little worried about how those young players are developing.
Me too.
But in terms of the scoring, I think that's been the other kind of bigger picture storyline. In addition to the parity, I mean, you mentioned we have all these huge scoring nights. I think it was like 50 guys are averaging 20 points a game. Then you have these, like, the StatMuse accounts that will just post, you know, slash lines side by side. And it's like, Donovan Mitchell is having the same numbers as Kobe's MVP season. Or, you know, this guy is having Dirk's MVP season. And it, to me, that says more about how the game has changed than how good some of these players are. That's not to take away from what Donovan Mitchell is doing. But
yeah.
The degree to which, obviously, I think we're both in agreement, players get more talented over time. But there's also, as good as the best player was in 2006, no one in like 2006 had the green light to come off of a high pick and roll and just take a pull up three whenever they wanted, like Donovan Mitchell does.
Right.
Which is crazy to think about, but it's just how the game was played. No one quite understood the value of that shot yet. And so you didn't have someone pulling up for eight threes a game. You just didn't have teams taking as many threes. The defense did not have to guard as much of the floor. And we've just had this kind of crazy scoring boom. And it's exciting to watch, I think. On the other hand, it is also... it goes up a notch in the playoffs, but I'm definitely someone who yearns for teams that went on to the defensive end of the floor. I love watching that style of basketball as well. Chris, are you enjoying the scoring boom? Do you have thoughts about it? Are you worried about it? How do you feel about kind of the direction the game is headed this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's when you're watching somebody cook, it's always fun. But at the same time, it does, when you see so many guys doing what they're doing, I do feel like on some level do I want to use the word cheapens? Cause it feels a little strong and it's maybe not fair, but you just can't weigh it the same. You can't view it as such a special thing anymore when you've got 11 guys in a month going for 50 or whatever it's been. You know, I'm just throwing a random number out there, but I bet it's not that far off. Hell, I took my nephew and my sister to the Bulls Warriors game the other day and Vooch had like 43 points. You know, so it's just like out of nowhere, these guys are just, the craziest thing about Donovan Mitchell is that I think he only had, did he even have 20 points?
At halftime, he had like 26 or something insane.
So, I mean, that's part of what it is. It's just like, I mean, honestly, you know, and we've talked about a little bit on this podcast, the take foul has sped the game up. You know, you're not able to foul guys anymore and stop them in transition.
So I want to put a pin in that real quick, because I agree that that's obviously had to have had some effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they bring it up on every podcast, on every broadcast. It's like, there's no take foul this year. Was the take foul really suppressing scoring this much? It's just, I'm not saying it's not a factor. It's just as interesting to me how many people cite it. Like, you just hear it so often. And in my mind, I'm like, was it suppressing scoring this much?
I don't necessarily know if that's what it was. I think it's a combination of a few things. I think, look, a lot of these teams, I don't know if it's more than normal, but it certainly has kind of felt this way. A lot of these teams have had their best score out. You know, you look at, you know, New Orleans, Boston, Brooklyn, Milwaukee. Luka might as well have somebody out, you know, just with how singular he is with that right. team. You know, the Bulls now, when I talked about Vucevic in the game he had, DeRozan has missed time. You know, all these teams have had a key guy out, and so it kind of leaves the ball more in the hands of certain people. You know, we talked about the pull-up nature of the game. When you look at the take fouls and the fact that they're not there and what it will kind of embolden even more, what do we see, you know, that drives the get off my lawn NBA fan crazy in transition all the time? Guys pulling up for threes when they could go all the way to the basket. So, I mean,
yeah.
If someone really has it going, the idea of a take foul slowing the game down, it's not, you know, it's not necessarily like one play here or there. It's that the game just keeps going. And specifically, think about a team like Sacramento, where how fast they play, that if you don't throw a random foul in there that just starts the game over, you know, after the 15 seconds it takes to take the ball out and reset everything, you could have three possessions before really anything stops, three, four possessions before anything stops. And so you've had so many scoring opportunities in that time. So I don't know. It's you know, when we talk about the parity and the fact that sometimes this plays out on a nightly basis, if you've got a team that's down 5 or 6 points, if there are more games that have been close this year, you're going to be sending guys to the line to extend the game. So, you know, I think about that a lot. Anytime I see somebody, like, I was actually surprised LeBron didn't get to 50 last night because of how close that game was at the end, that he had like 43, 44 in the last 2 minutes of the game. And I'm like, okay, and the Lakers are ahead by 4 or 5. And so the Lakers are going to end up going to the line because the Rockets are going to extend the game. So that happens in a league where you've got more parity than usual and a lot of really tight games, seemingly, you're going to have that. So it's, you know, I don't know if there's any one thing, but the pace has been cranked enough to where it's like, yeah, if you had guys that were hovering around 25 points, which we had a lot of those guys last year, all of a sudden you give them 3-4 extra points. You've got 30, in terms of 30-point scores, I think you've got 8 or 9 guys that are averaging 30.
I look at some of the numbers and I'm like, Embiid's, like, we don't talk about Joel Embiid enough on this podcast. It's my fault. Mm-hmm. But he's at like 35 a game. Like, Embiid's having an insane season. And I think part of the reason people aren't talking about it more is, like you mentioned, so many guys are averaging 30. And I don't want to take away from like Tatum or whomever, but yeah, it was a lot different. And I'm not like the biggest, like, Kobe was the greatest of all time guy, but Kobe scoring like 27 a night, or when he went off for 80, or when he had the 40-point game stretches, or whatever he was doing kind of in that in-between Shaq and Powell era, you know, like 2006 to 2008, was a lot harder than, because people were just weren't taking threes, the pace was a lot slower, the court was nowhere near as spaced out. This is, so I think I've mentioned this before, but the old host of this podcast, Ben Golliver and Andrew Sharp, would always joke with me that I was going to turn 30 and all my takes were going to turn into old man takes. And I was like, that'll never happen to me. I'm Ro baby. I'm young forever. But they were right. They were absolutely right. And one of my old man takes that's now starting to develop is, I'm a little worried about this season as an inflection point for NBA history. I'm worried that you and I are going to have to be the people who explain 15 years from now, why Donovan Mitchell was in fact not as good as Kobe Bryant, or, you know, name whoever. We're going to have to explain, you know, why Tim Duncan, what's Tim Duncan's career points per game average? It's probably around 17, 18, something like that.
Yeah, because he played for so many years at the end where he wasn't.
We're going to have to explain why Tim Duncan didn't shoot threes. It's like, we're going to have to explain why Tim Duncan would still be good in the current NBA. I'm weirdly a little nervous about what this season and kind of how hard it's going to be to put the NBA in proper context anymore.
Yeah, like I remember when I played, I guess Little League baseball, but when I started to get a little bit older in the upper ranges of Little League, and for like a couple of years there, Louisville Sluggers started making these aluminum bats that could have fatter barrels. And after about 2-3 years, they're like, okay, no more. Just because it makes it impossible to pitch, it makes it impossible to field, it makes it impossible to keep enough baseballs with each team because people are just hitting them out, you know, out of the yard. And obviously, you know, we've had conversations about that with Major League Baseball with regards to, you know, the home runs and whether the balls are juiced and stuff like that. We've been adding, and football has done this too. I mean, I think it's just sports in general when you're trying to get people to watch. And you're petrified of having Jeff Van Gundy rail on you for a whole broadcast about the different things that make him not want to watch or not as excited to watch, that offense ends up being advantaged more, just like with football, with all the passing stuff over the last few years, the last 15, 20 years, probably. Basketball has had their fair share of that stuff too. And I probably just sound like a get off my lawn person or someone that wrote a book about the 90s Knicks, which if you've read it, I don't really take sides about which version's better. Like, I'm just writing the book down the middle. But
is the book any good, by the way? I still got to check that out.
I think it is. I'm biased. I'm obviously a little biased. I got to
grab one of the two copies I have on the shelf and maybe open it.
I mean, I think it informs a lot for you specifically. I think it informs a lot of the way the Heat play basketball or have played basketball for a long time because of Riley's DNA. But you know, I do think there's something to be said for, like, there are ways to curb the scoring, because I do think you're right. And it's a question of how much does the league care about that? Just like how much did baseball care about the idea that a lot of guys were going to be hitting 50 home runs? If you don't care, then it's not a problem. If you do and you feel like something is being lost, particularly at a time where the league is trying to figure out ways to jam more basketball in, you know, and it's getting pressure to shorten the season or have fewer games or whatever, the league is going to be really reluctant to make a lot of changes. But I do think you're starting to push toward the upper ranges. Like, how high can you let this go? Are you going to get to a point where guys are scoring 40 a game? And then it looks ridiculous in relation to something where most guys were averaging less than 30 for so long. So I am intrigued by that. I still enjoy watching it, but I do think that it again, I can't think of another word other than cheapens, but it waters it down. Maybe not cheapens, but it waters it down because so many guys are doing it that it doesn't feel as special anymore when someone gets 50. Like we used to, it's always just such a huge deal. It used to be something where, you know, guys are pouring water on the guys at half court and they're getting the post game interview and, you know, it's leading SportsCenter. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, SportsCenter can't, you know, lead with five different guys having 50 on a given night, four different guys having 50 on a given night.
No, it's a good point. It's definitely, I think, watered down is a good way to put it. And that's, again, we're not trying to disrespect the current era. I'm not one of those people that's like, it was better when I was growing up. I'm loving watching these games every night and I'm loving the talent around the league. I like that teams, coaches, players, everyone has gotten wise to the kind of the ways to optimize the floor, optimize the way to play the game. You have to be so skilled, you know, as much as the scoring might be watered down, at the same time, there are players, frankly, from previous eras, specialists who could not cut it today because you will be exposed. Like, I think about someone like Ruben Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
could he exist in today's NBA? Like,
why did you bring him up? I'm curious.
I just was like, who's like the most like burly, like I hesitate to say like, but he couldn't play offense is what I'm getting at. Like,
sure.
He could not play. Okay. Our producer Shelby is chiming in that Ruben Patterson, former Portland Trailblazer, was the Kobe stopper, which is...
That's what I was about to say. Like, could he play? You probably would need him on some level just to try to stop Nash from scoring 180 points, you know?
I'm pretty sure I've been served a specific IG clip that was like, it's Kobe being like, Ruben Patterson was not the Kobe stopper.
He wasn't, but it's convenient. But I know Ruben is listening to this somewhere and is going to be like, why did I just catch this wild
I'm so
stray?
Sorry. I'm so sorry. That's true. And listen, but I love those types of players. I love... You know, this is not the same. I think he could have cut it a little bit more, but like, the PJ Brown types, I love those rough and tumble guys. So, it's just a different league. And I do think it's interesting. And I just hope that as people watch the game, everyone cools their jets a little bit, make sure we keep this in context, especially these like accounts that just everyone loves to do the comparison thing. And it gets so annoying. And I try to be cheeky with it when I do it. But please recognize that even though Donovan Mitchell is having a fantastic season, he's not having Kobe's 2007 season or whatever it is. Like, let's just all take a deep breath and recognize that the game is a lot different.
Do you think the average person knows that? Like, it's hard. I'm trying to take off, like, my NBA analyst
hat. I don't know.
I hope people know. I mean, like, statistically, you can do that, but it gets really disingenuous because I think that the smarter way to view the question is, like, not statistically in terms of just counting stats or even efficiency stats at a certain point, because the game has changed from that standpoint, too, with the focus on the three ball and the, you know, the prominence of guys getting to the line, the prevalence of guys getting to the line. I would hope that people can view it, especially at that, like, all NBA level of ultimately where does this guy rank throughout the league? Almost like an NBA rank of sorts, but like Kobe was constantly in that, like, is he the MVP or is he like the second, third best player in the league? I don't think anybody's saying that about Donovan Mitchell right now. And like, I think that's okay. He's having a great season. He's got his team in position to maybe get home court advantage in the East, which is ahead of schedule for them. So I think it's fine, like, for Donovan Mitchell to be in an all NBA conversation without being like an MVP candidate. But if Kobe is an annual MVP candidate for those years, let's not make that comparison. It's no different than the questions about Mike and, you know, Michael Jordan and, like, you know, his predecessors from the previous generation, essentially. Kobe was a different generation at this point versus who we're talking about. I know he played forever, but just like LeBron at this point, theoretically, should kind of be a different generation. The guy was talking to Jabari Smith Jr., and Jabari Smith was saying that his dad played against LeBron in his first career game. Like, so these guys are of a different generation when you really think about it, and that's probably the safest way to think about it because the game has shifted completely from when LeBron even started his career.
Oh, man. I'm worried about the kids, Chris. Just kids, listen to this podcast. Make sure you're in touch with your history. Let's move on to a team we have not discussed enough on this podcast so far this year, and that is the New York Knickerbockers. Shout out to the New York Knicks, having a hell of a season. I really liked the Jalen Brunson signing. I never quite understood. This is me patting myself on the back. I'm pulling the herring Giannis move right here, but I liked the Jalen Brunson signing, and lo and behold, Julius Randle is having another resurgent season. The Knicks are sixth in the East, three games behind Cleveland for number five. Weirdly, middling at home, 11-12 at home, dominant, quote unquote, on the road, 14-8. 2-5 division record, which is interesting. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games, 25-20. They've been really good. They've just been really good. Randle is averaging 24.4 a game, 10.6 rebounds. Huge comeback season for him. Brunson, 22 points a game, 6 assists. What have you made of the Knicks? How seriously are you taking them? Wherever you want to take this convo, Chris, you tell me.
Okay, so I do think that there's an element of what they're doing that is real. and legitimate. I think, as I wrote today, you know, and kind of focused on in my newsletter, Brunson, that was never a bad signing. And you can kind of go back and look at what you've said, what you've written, what I've said, what I've written. I think there's too much of a hyper focus and too much of a fear, particularly with the big markets that get written about a lot in terms of overpays. And I made reference to that today in my newsletter, that the same conversation was being had 3 years ago about Fred VanVleet when he was going to be a free agent. And the Knicks were mentioned as a potential landing spot for him. And I remember seeing a lot of fans saying like, oh, like that, you know, he would be a wild overpay at this point, you know, coming off the title and everything else and, you know, his improvement. You know, I don't want to have to overpay him. And by overpay, people basically mean $20 million. He ended up getting $21 million a year. Brunson, you know, fast forward 3 years, Brunson got $26 million a year and is on a descending contract where he's making less money each one of those years on the deal. He's making literally an average amount of money for a starting point guard in the league. And I would venture to, you know, I would weigh in and say he's playing better than average. He's averaging, you know, even if a lot of guys in the league are averaging 30 a game, he's averaging 30 for the month, 31 for the month, 31 and a half for the month. He's, you know, he's been fantastic for them. He's won them games. He's legitimately won them games. And I think aside from his own stuff, as you just mentioned, I think even if the numbers don't bear it out as far as like, you know, how they shoot off of Brunson's passes specifically, I think that he's made life more comfortable for Julius Randle. He's made life more comfortable for RJ Barrett to the tune of them having seasons that are more reminiscent of what they did 2 years ago, as opposed to, you know, when they were struggling last year and the moments where they struggled last year. So, you know, I think it's a huge win for them. He's shot 52% in the clutch on like 60 some shots. He's been fantastic. What I'm a little bit curious about, they're basically a top 10 team on either side of the ball, which normally screams this team's a contender. So you're normally not used to seeing a team that has those sorts of numbers be sixth in the East and, you know, not super, super comfortably like in the playoffs at this point. You know, they still are like potentially in play-in range. And when you marry that with the fact that they've got one of the hardest schedules left in the league, I don't think they have a whole lot of wins that you can look at and be like, oh, this team has beaten a bunch of good squads. So it's early from that standpoint. They've blown a lot of games. Like, they very easily could have a record that's three or four games better than what it is. They've lost at the buzzer a couple times. You know, they've dropped a couple games that they absolutely should have won. I think if you ask the average Knicks fan, they would say they've lost twice now. When you ask about their division record, they've lost twice now to Toronto in games that they probably should have won. I'm going to be very curious to see, like, do certain people revert? If they have an injury, let's say to like a Quentin Grimes, for instance, who has already missed time this year. I think he has like an outsized impact on that team because he's such a good defender and such a good floor spacer who doesn't need the ball to really help that team a lot. Whereas you've got three guys that all kind of expect and need the ball on offense. And so I think Grimes is kind of a perfect fit for a team like that. It was a no-brainer, and a lot of Knicks fans will tell you it was a no-brainer to be playing him a lot more than somebody like Evan Fournier, who started the season for them. So I think that a lot of the right buttons have been pushed and moves have been made. But I do want to see, like, do they revert to a worse form of themselves when the going gets tough, essentially. They've still got to play Boston three more times. They've got to play the Nuggets. They've got to play the Nets three more times. The Sixers twice, Cleveland twice, the Pelicans twice.
Don't think they've played Miami yet.
So they've got some challenging games coming up at some point. Yeah. But I mean, if you had if you're the Knicks, if you're a Knicks fan, and you get to the 45 game mark, 25-20, with games you've left on the table,
you should be with the team, very happy.
Yeah, with the team that is essentially top 10 on both sides of the ball. With Randle like being a borderline all-star, Brunson being a borderline all-star, you take that all day long. And really guys out of the rotation that I think at a different point in Thibodeau's career, I don't think he would have made those decisions.
Yeah.
To have Fournier out of the rotation and Grimes in, to have McBride in the rotation and Rose out. So I'm very curious to see what they do. I'm also very curious to see whether they go and add to this. They've got some guys that I think they could realistically trade to try to speed this up a little bit more, to try to make more of a run at this. And depending on what they were to do in a situation like that, I think that they could they'd be intriguing.
Yeah, them being top 10 in offense and defense is remarkable. It really is. Mm-hmm. What do you make of Randall's season? Because he is the big 21 season, which kind of had some important factors. You know, the Knicks had like 9 months off before that season. It was a COVID year. A lot of guys in and out of the lineup.
Sure.
Last year, he kind of crashes back down to earth. He's getting like into arguments with fans. Not arguments, but...
No, he was. He flipped them off.
Yeah. He was...
Flipped them off. He gave him the thumbs down, what was it? Or something.
Yeah, you know, mixing it up with fans in a not positive manner. And then this year it's 24-10-3, I think 50% from the field. You know, the counting stats are all there. I still think that his defense maybe leaves a little bit to be desired. But what do you make of the Randall Renaissance? Are you buying into it? Is he a number two? Three or number two on a good team, 45% from the field, 34% from three. How do you feel about Randall so far?
So I think he, like on a championship team, I don't think he's any higher than a number three. You know, so I keep thinking about it from that standpoint. In the same way that when I watched the Brunson signing, I didn't think that he was a number one on like a top tier playoff team in the East. I think that he's more of a number two. Hell, if Brunson could be your number three, you would take that too. We'd obviously be talking about a really good team if all of a sudden Randall is your number three or your number four and Brunson is your number, or if he's your number three. So I think that they're still clearly one star level guy away. It is really interesting to give thought now to, like, given how Donovan Mitchell has looked this year, what if Donovan Mitchell was on this team? Yeah. You know, obviously you would lose some of the guys that you have on, you know, that you really feel good about if you're the Knicks, but maybe they would have been even more interesting than we give them credit for. I figured they would have been a defensively challenged team if they'd done that. But I also thought that Cleveland would be more defensively challenged than they are, and they've basically been the best defense in the league so far. So, you know, that I'm sure on some level that has to sting for the Knicks. Again, they're 25-20, so they're fine. But I think that they, I have some questions about certain guys. I have some questions about what Thibodeau is going to do down the stretch with certain things, but I do think that Randall, this was the best you could have asked for if you were a Knicks fan with Randall. You figured he wasn't nearly as bad as what he showed last year. Right. You also probably figured that he wasn't nearly as good as what he showed 2 years ago. And I know, I think you were on the side of there's a regression coming. I know Michael Pina was like beating the drum every chance he could get. Mike Jones. Who? Mike Jones. Look at Chris understanding cultural reference. But Michael was super pessimistic about Randall ever repeating that season.
Him and I had many discussions about that regression coming last year.
It hit hard.
But in Randall's defense, I don't know anyone who saw this season from him.
Right. But I mean, the reality is, and even if you just look at the last two seasons, this is essentially almost like splitting the baby between the season he had 2 years ago and the season he had last year. Like, it's not, I mean, numbers wise here or there, it's pretty close, but it's like, it's pretty much like the dead center of those two seasons, the middle of those, the average of those two. So you know, that I think that was the best you could have asked for, is like, you knew he wasn't that great and you knew he wasn't that bad. So if you could just give us something in between those two, and that's your normal now, that's your new normal, I think fans could deal with that. And I think also that from the standpoint of, like, if you traded him, certainly with the also, like, he had one of the stranger seasons I've ever seen last year, just as far, he just seemed so unhappy and so agitated. And he still has moments where that frustration flashes, certainly towards the refs. And you even hear Mike Breen make references to it. He made a reference to it yesterday of trying to kind of keep the temper down. but you weren't going to get much in return for him if you did deal him, if you did deal him now. So this is the best you could have asked for, is like get a guy that is a 25 point per game scorer who's relatively efficient, who's not forcing the issue as much. And I think that's part of what it was last year. He was an all-star. He was an all-NBA talent 2 years ago. So who's really going to take the ball out of his hands and tell him to calm down, particularly if you don't have a starting caliber point guard? And they were using Alec Burks at point guard last year for most of the season. That wasn't going to cut it. But shout out to Alec Burks, by the way. I was looking at his numbers yesterday.
Solid pro. Solid pro.
His numbers are like better with Detroit, which is hard to understand given that, you know, it's a team that is struggling right now. Understandably so. But Alec Burks for the last couple of years now has had really good numbers, and could maybe, you know, at some point could help a contending team, you know, if he were in that sort of role. But no, I mean, Randall, this is all you could ask for from him. And Barrett, as he always does, comes out of like those that two-month hibernation to start the season and plays much better. He had 32 yesterday or whatever it was, had a huge dunk that even really put the game in overtime to begin with, which was just like a heads up play.
That was nuts.
A nasty play. I can't remember too many plays where I've seen like an emphatic dunk to send the game to overtime in the last second of regulation. But, you know, I think that they're going to be fine. They need to be a little bit mindful of, if they have an injury, being ready to pivot and make a deal soon, because I don't think they're going to have so much cushion to where they can withstand a Grimes injury for 3 weeks or something like that. Or, you know, if Brunson were to get hurt and miss real time, I do think it changes the outlook for a team like this because of how good he's been for them. So as long as they're healthy, though, I think that they, you know, they're a very, very interesting team. I'm not sure they strike fear in the hearts of anybody just yet, but look, we'll see how they come out of this tougher schedule for the second half.
You mentioned the schedule. It's going to be interesting that it's getting tougher because, like I mentioned, that home road split is weird. I don't know if that's fluky or going to be indicative of something. I don't want to do like the "they should trade for someone" talk, but I just want to throw it out there. I don't know who the next star is going to become, who becomes available. Is it's possible it's like a Bradley Beal. Do you feel like they need to get back in the star hunting game, or should they just be kind of happy with this current build? And because as of right now, let me start here. Would you be shocked if they made the second round of the playoffs?
As it stands right now, a little bit. Yeah. Because I mean, even if they,
it still feels like there's a clear line between them, Philly, Cleveland, Boston, Milwaukee. Yeah.
I mean, they've played, let's put it this way, they've played really competitive games against those teams. I mean, if you talk to the Knicks fans,
have been good. Yeah.
Right. They would be furious that they dropped those Bucks games. You know, they've played Philly very competitively. You know, I just kind of feel like you can't draw too much of a conclusion from regular season matchups, certainly first half of the season matchups, and then extrapolate that and then say, oh, well, we'd match up really well in the playoffs. It's a different level. Brunson has that experience. And a lot of those Knicks players do have the experience, but it was, you know, we saw how overmatched they were in you know, a series against a, you know, a pretty solid Atlanta team. I think we can look back and say that talent wise, they had a lot of talent, but they were also making a first appearance in the playoffs that year. So I just kind of feel like they need another guy. From where I sit, they need another guy. I'm interested to see how they do against teams that have more length. I thought it was really interesting yesterday. I pointed out in my newsletter, Brunson got blocked 5 times yesterday. He'd only been blocked 23 times the whole season in, what, 40, 41 games, whatever it was. So, you know, I do think sometimes they have a tendency to kind of force things a little bit. Randall can be guilty of that. You know, when Brunson isn't playing all that well, I feel like that's kind of a tendency that he has to. We've seen Barrett press a lot. So I just think that normally at this point, it's been long enough since they were in the playoffs to where it's like, I kind of want to see them again in the playoffs, but also I don't imagine them finishing much higher than where they're at right now. So they're going to be a team that is, you know, not getting home court advantage. They're theoretically going to be playing against a Boston, a Brooklyn, you know, whether it's Philly, whether it is Milwaukee, whoever, they're going to be playing against a team that's got more experience in those moments than they do, and has more big guns, I think, than they do, probably. So we'll see. But I would venture to guess that it's a first round and out. And then, yeah, I do think that they should probably go star hunting if that's the case, because you have something that at this point, if you do make the playoffs, would have worked pretty quickly. And I think that the expectation was that they would be right around where they are, maybe a little bit lower as far as a playoff team with adding Brunson. And I think that, you know, it's simple addition, but just, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. If you go get one more guy, and again, you can knock everybody down a peg in terms of where they rank in terms of your usage, I think that works wonders for you with this team, particularly if you can maintain the level of defense that you've been playing this year. So I would do that. Would you? Where do you feel about their star hunting stuff?
It kind of comes down to how you feel about RJ Barrett, in my opinion, because I don't think Randall is the guy who teams are going to want back in a trade for a star. They're not trading Brunson. We know that they offered Barrett for Donovan Mitchell. And it's eerie. It's eerie how similar RJ Barrett's stats are to last season. He's averaging, last year, 20.0 points a game. This year, 20.0 points a game. Last year, 5.8 rebounds. This year, 5.5. Last year, 3 assists. This year, 2.9. Last year, 2.2 turnovers. This year, 2.3. He's shooting slightly better from the field, but slightly worse from 3. I don't know that I really trust his 3-point shot. Last year, it was at 34%. This year's at 32%. He's not bad, but he's not going to be someone who is teams are selling out on the perimeter. It's going to be a combination of how do you feel about Barrett and who's that next star that becomes available? Because if it's like Bradley Beal, I think I maybe wouldn't put RJ Barrett in a Brad Beal deal.
Wow.
And I really, Beal, the things that concern me about Beal are one, he's getting older and does he play?
Fair. I mean, every team would have to evaluate. I feel like that's a question you have to ask with any trade. You know, a lot of, I think you included have kind of talked about the, is there an Anthony Davis trade that makes sense? Should they trade him? Any team that is making a deal of that magnitude, you have to ask yourself, what's the injury risk here? And so, I mean, that's fair of Beal, but I think it's probably fair of most guys. I'd also have to look at exactly how much time he's missed. But we've, at this point, we've gotten used to him missing time every year, at least.
Yeah. I mean, he's only 29, but they just signed the massive contract. I mean,
he did. But to me, here's the thing. Barrett, again, it depends on what you think is going to become of him. If you think he's going to be a, you know, let's say Barrett like impresses, because I think impressive now would be like, if the guy could be an all-star 4 times, I think you would take that. I'm sure there are some people that on the one end of the spectrum that are like diehard Knicks fans, diehard Barrett fans would say that's blasphemous. He could do more than that. You're underselling him. If you ask the Knicks, I think, especially for what they gave him contract-wise, like, I think they would take that. He's got a lot of incentives in his contract that can push his number higher, but he's making less than 30 a year. You know, at a time where a lot of guys in his class, or a couple, the guys right above him in his class were getting maxes and will be super max guys soon. So I think you would take that if you're Barrett and you're the Knicks. At this point, though, like, unless he's going to show that somewhat quickly, especially if you're talking about making a playoff run this year and you're looking to add a star next year, I'm not even concerned about Barrett. I'm just kind of more really fixated on what you pointed out, which is that his numbers have been so consistent, but so kind of like it leaves you wanting a little bit more.
Yes, a little bit. And he has these stretches where you're like, oh my God, he's put it together and he's a two-way force.
And then he regresses and reverts.
Yeah. Yeah, and progression's not linear. I'm not saying this is who he is, but at the same time, it's who he's been so far, and it's a legitimate question how much better he's going to get. And I guess the Beal thing to me, it's less that like I think Barrett's like untouchable. It's more like, do you take the risk on the literal next star who becomes available, or do you try to hold out for someone in particular?
Right.
Is there a world in which Joel Embiid becomes available? Or I don't know. I mean, I'm just throwing out big names, but what if, is there a world in which Jaylen Brown, maybe? I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. If you're the Knicks, I don't know that, this is no disrespect to him. I don't think, just like we saw with the Jazz deal, Barrett wasn't moving the needle so much in the Donovan Mitchell thing.
I couldn't believe the Jazz didn't take Barrett back for Mitchell, for what it's worth. That shocked me.
I mean, it's a little surprising, but it's like, I think it also is a wake-up call where I think we've gotten so in the habit, and by we, I mean, I think just the basketball Twitter sphere in general, where we just kind of take for granted, like, oh, if a team has a bunch of assets, as many as the Knicks have, as many as like the Thunder have, you name it, and they also have like a guy that is, you know, has all-star potential, which I think most people would say Barrett at least has that at some point. Who knows when it happens, if it happens. But that, and, you know, someone that is a 20-point-per-game youngster, that, you know, we assume that the other team will just take back the best player in that deal. But again, Barrett was on the cusp of getting a new deal or an extension. And I've said this before about different guys. I've said it before. Ben Simmons, obviously, is a different case. But I don't blame teams for wanting to build exactly they want to build around exactly the guy they want.
Well, what they really want is to not trade for players and trade for draft picks so they have plausible deniability when they lose.
Right.
And then can kick the can down the road and give themselves a 10-year window.
Right. But
that's a whole other discussion.
But I think the point you brought up about Barrett and kind of, you know, growth isn't linear, but the numbers being relatively the same from year in to year out. I remember the same thing being true of Miles Turner for a long time, where his numbers, no matter what he does, no matter what hot streak he goes on, I wrote a story about it when I was still at 538. He had like basically the most static stat line of all time from year to year. And I think it's part of the reason that, again, if you talk to Pacers fans, especially some of the ones that were like, look, trade Sabonis and then free up Miles Turner. Like, don't make Miles Turner have to play behind Sabonis and what he can't do defensively. Then they get rid of Sabonis and his numbers are still the same. Now he's having a career year. So it's interesting of like, how long do you wait for that pot of gold, which, by the way, might not ever come. Everybody's different. Everybody's timeline is different. Like you said, growth isn't always linear, but I just don't know that it's a given that if you want someone like Embiid, first of all, there's going to be a lot of suitors. We know that with any player of his caliber.
Yeah. I think that there's, you know, there's all kinds of CAA whispers, and Embiid to the Knicks is not a new or novel.
But here's the thing. If you do that, I just don't know that the Knicks would have they would obviously have a plethora of draft picks that are appealing to anybody. I don't know that they're youth.
I mean, they'd have to really empty talent. Out Grimes, Barrett.
It would have to be everybody. And, like, I just don't think that, you know, like, as it stands – I don't think Barrett excites everybody. I think people are split on how they feel about him.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that's normally your headliner in a trade for someone of, like, perennial all-NBA talent. So we'll see. I'd be interested. That's why I reacted the way I did when you said that you might not give up Barrett for Beal, because I think Barrett is
probably a
non-starter for enough teams. Not everybody, but you know, I think that you would try to sweeten the pot from there if he was on the table.
That's a very fair point. Who do you like more? Barrett or Hero?
Honestly, I would say if we're talking about future, I would say Barrett. And also like just completely apart from their teams, like singular player. Because I think Hero's got really, really great talent around him. Not great talent, but like very, very good talent.
I mean, around him. He's got Jimmy Bam, Kyle Lowry. An incredible coach. He's in an ecosystem.
He's got better infrastructure for now. Now that said, Barrett has a better situation, but I'm still waiting on him. Like, I don't know. I will say this. I think we're getting to that point now where it's like, you've got to show some progression. And I see Knicks fans tweeted RJ's trainer a lot. And like his, you know, like, what is he working on this summer? Like, you know, almost like a story time. And he's like, well, this summer we're, you know, almost like a chef is like telling you what's on the specials menu. He's got to start showing something that's like sustainable and not I don't want to necessarily see him have a 2-week hot streak where he goes for 27 a game and then it regresses where he's shooting 15-20% from three for then the next 3 weeks. He's had that every year. He started slowly every year. He has a point guard now. He's, you know, solidly like their third guy now. And you would hope that that kind of means that it frees up more opportunities for him. It gives him less of a defender to have to go up against. But, you know, he's had really good moments. He has really good flashes. He always does. But I think it sometime soon, I think it's going to be time to see a little bit more than just that.
I can't make fun of Knicks fans for tweeting at RJ Schrader because I texted Chris Brickley during the playoffs to thank him for what he did to Jimmy Butler's jump shot. Jimmy just came out, started hitting all these threes. I was like, this is sick. It's like every day he's posting a video with him in the gym with Chris.
Yeah.
Shout out
to Chris, man. Chris is
he's a legend, dude.
I got to know him a little bit when I was covering the Knicks because he was doing so much work with Carmelo Anthony and those guys. And he's a hardworking dude, and he's worked a lot to grow kind of the clientele that he deals with. So
we used to do the old SITV show, the crossover, and Brickley came on a couple times. Just like the second time, he's like, "Yeah, I'll come hang." And he was really nice dude.
Yeah,
like ran us through a set of fake basketball drills, and I just kept flopping the whole time. he's a good dude. Shout out to Chris Brickley, man. Chris, that will do it for today's episode of Open Floor. We didn't get to talk about Man on Fire today. Did I tell you that I watched Training Day for the first time like 3 weeks ago?
You did not, but every time I watch that movie, I'm like, yo, this is it's fascinating to watch. It's kind of
very interesting to watch now. Yeah,
it's a little bit infuriating to me that was Denzel's first Best Actor Oscar, because I just kind of feel like I think. The Academy Awards have so many makeup awards, and I think there were a lot of people of color that were really frustrated. They're like, why does he have to play a bad guy to win the award when he's shown so much versatility?
And not only that, he has to play like a specific kind of bad guy, and I mean, we're really gonna get the juxtaposition of his character to Ethan Hawke's character and some of the politics of that, and it's a very interesting movie to watch now, you know, over 20 years later, because the performance is still remarkable. It's a great performance.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
I've been saying You Like to Get Wet to my friends every day since I saw the movie.
There's some great lines in that movie.
Yeah.
I saw the whale. I saw the whale the other night. I dropped what I was doing after I saw the Brendan Fraser speech. Mm. And that speech happened. I didn't see it until 9:45 my time. I was scrolling through Twitter and I was like, holy hell, this is powerful. And I know, generally speaking, what the movie's about. So I literally got on my phone like, where's the closest theater that's showing it? And I was like, I've got time tonight. If it bleeds into tomorrow, I don't have time because I'm moving. I'm packing all my boxes up. So there was one showing at 10 o'clock at a theater about 20 minutes away. I hopped in an Uber. Like, I called the Uber, threw on some shoes, went to the theater, got there like right as the previews were ending. And watched it and just was like spellbound. It was crazy to watch. It's also interesting to watch the criticism of that movie.
Yes, I need to see it because I've heard very interesting criticisms, and I'm very interested in his performance.
His acting job's top notch. It's just scary how good he was in that film. It's a hard movie to watch though, so be prepared for that.
I gotta check it out. But we will have to do a full hour on Denzel performances one day. Maybe we get in Spike in for that pod.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
He'd probably be down. I'll talk to him.
There we go. But that will do it for today's episode of Open Floor. Thank you to my friend Chris Herring. Thank you to all of our listeners. Please keep your emails coming in. We got some good emails that we did not get to today, but shout out to Elliot, Thaddeus, the whole crew, Ellie. Thank you guys for all your emails. We'll do some emails again soon, I promise. openfloormail@gmail.com. Until then, continue to enjoy the NBA season.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.